This morning Gregory is going to speak on the power of family.
You know, that being right thing, called a lot of difficulties in marriages, and that's a hard one to detach from and give up. How many of you are wrong all the time? Because if you got somebody right all the time, you got somebody wrong all the time. I got an email the other day of somebody asking me why I don't talk a lot about God. And so I thought I'd talk a little bit about God to answer that. And I believe that however you deal, understand, relate to your ultimate good and your ultimate value, your sense of God, that's intimate. And it's private. And in our context today, there is an effort to eliminate the private world and make everything public. It's just too, it's just true. The private world has a depth to it. The public world has no depth. The public world is sound bites, conversation about entertainment, conversation about television. It doesn't have any private reflection to deepen our souls. So when we talk about intimate things, I want to do that in private. There's an awful lot of public conversation about God, Jesus, rapture, and such. But as soon as we do that, as soon as we say the word God, somehow in my mind, I've constructed something that I mean by that word. And consciously and unconsciously, I will begin to manipulate you and relate to you to conform to that model in my head about my God. And that's the way it works, and that's the way our minds work. I know what you believe your ultimate good is and your ultimate value is. All we have to do is watch one another, and we will know what's deep within your soul. If I need to be public about my intimate life, there's something going on that I need to attend to. And when I hear a lot of intimate talk in the public arena, it frightens me, because then there's a great effort to make me conform to that ultimate good that's in the public arena, which denies me transformation in my private world. So I'm mindful of that sacred ground which is intimate. And I think we ought to tread on that ground publicly. If there needs to be conversation about what's deep within your soul and your understanding, or how you might understand God or not God, call. There are a lot of very spiritual people in this church. There's a lot of wisdom in this church. And there are people that will sit down and talk with you about what's going on with your soul. And in a way, we ought to be doing that anyway, because those are the things that are important, and that's what strengthens a community when we are intimate with people we care about. Now, on the other hand, spiritual growth, which is one of our goals and our principles, I will attend to quite a bit. And spiritual growth is the hard work of how we take our ultimate goods and our ultimate values, our sense of God, and our spiritual growth is how we put it in behavior as we relate to one another and as we relate to ourselves. Now that's hard work. That's discipline. There was a while back, I was pressuring, and I try not to pressure too much, that people pick a spiritual discipline, whether it was Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, Wiccan, whatever it was. Pick one and use it and exercise with it. And in a way, master it. Then pick another. Many masters of a particular tradition often spend time in mastering another tradition. When we had that great meeting of Western religion and Eastern religion, and Christian scholars and mystics got together with other scholars and mystics, and they realized they were on a similar path, and the walls of anger and the walls of division began to drop. Spiritual growth is what we're talking about when we're talking about family. And we're using some sense of family as the lens to try to understand our spiritual growth and how we structure our values. When we told the Buddha stories, we understood that in order to reach enlightenment, according to the Buddhist tradition, Buddha had to move inward and deal with his inner world. And if you remember, one of his last walls, one of his last prisons he had to break through, he uttered the words, "I see you, jailkeeper. I see you," which would cause me not to understand reality in its purity. "I see you." That was an inward journey he took. In the Christian tradition, in the teachings of Jesus, the kingdom of God is within you. So our journey about our spiritual growth moves us inward to those deeper places within us. So we take a family lens to try to understand our family, to try to understand how we can use that to nurture and to observe our spiritual growth. And the family lens that I'm going to take today, and the other one is one that you might be familiar with. I've talked about it several times in here. And that's the family system that comes out of the codependent literature, which has the dependent, the enabler, the hero child, the scapegoat child, the lost child, and the mascot. And the dependent, and you can apply this family system not only to our inner worlds, to our relationships, but also to our national politics and international politics. It is a way to understand the world, so it's a way to interpret the world. One thing I always like to say, if I'm not using the model to interpret the world, I could be the model itself and not be my truest self. And I think that'll make sense in a minute. So I want to use this family system of the dependent and the enabler, and that comes from a family system of addiction and enabling and addiction and the parents and that kind of thing. But the important thing about the relationship between partners who have children is that there's something wrong. There's a division. And what happens when the first child is born, the first child has the purpose of distracting from the problem between the partners. That's the purpose of the first child. And so the first child becomes the hero, and all the attention goes on the first child, and the first child is loved, and the first child is cared for, and the first child gets a lot of affirmation. Not unlike our national politics, we know there's a problem in our two-party system, and we know they like to pick heroes to distract us from the parties and manipulate us. Sure, that goes on. The second child, the scapegoat child, sees the goodness that's going on over here and wants some of that. But because of that triangle serves a purpose and distracts from uncomfortableness, the secondborn can't get the same kind of good stuff the firstborn gets. And that's when the scapegoat goes to negative behavior. Remember the first time you ever understood negative behavior gets attention? Do you ever understand how that works? We will get some attention and some care for ourselves somehow. We will get it. And if it's not going to be positive, we could even pick a fight with somebody. You never know. The next child is the lost child. The lost child sees this mess down here, this interaction, this chaos. And the lost child says, "I don't want any of that." And they go up in their room and they read and they isolate and they hang out where it's safe. The mascot looks at all that mess downstairs, tumbles down the stairs, and gets everybody to laugh and breaks the tension. How many of us have ever used laughter to break our anxiety or to break somebody else's anxiety, or somebody's in a bad mood and we want to make them laugh so they're not going to be in a bad mood? That's mascot behavior. And I thought today what we would do is we would look at a family situation, and then your homework will be to apply that model to that family situation and see if you can make sense out of it. And the family that we're going to talk about is Isaac and Rebekah, a story from the Hebrew sacred text. Now, Isaac and Rebekah had twins, Jacob and Esau. And as its story goes, Jacob was coming first, but Esau grabbed the heel, pulled it back, and so they're fighting already as they're being born. So you know there's going to be problems. Okay. Now, the father, Isaac, favors Esau. Esau goes out and in the woods and hunts and does all that man stuff. Right? So, Isaac, Jacob watches all that. And he can't get into it. He can't get the affirmation from his father. Now, the mother, Rebecca's watching that. So how does she feel watching her son not being cared for by the father? How many of you have witnessed your children not being cared for by people that ought to have cared for them in the way you would like? Often. And it hurts us and it breaks our heart. Also, what's revealed is that the vision's not talked about between the two parents. So now we have Esau and the father and Jacob and the mother divided. And a division's going on in that family. Now, Esau, as it is often in hero child, an embarrassment about cell phones, as it is often about hero child, they don't even know what's going on with this stuff over here. You've ever heard somebody say that has done well in life, I don't know what's wrong with my brother or sister, we had the same parents? The hero child says, I just don't get it. Look, we grew up the same house, same everything. I just, same church, same everything. I just don't get it. See, Esau doesn't even know what's going on back in the house, that father's not affirming, that mother's manipulating out. He has no idea that's what's going on in that house. So Esau's kind of innocent in a way, but he is still the hero child. Now, Isaac is about to die, and they're in a system where the firstborn gets the blessing and gets everything. The mother finally had enough and said, this is not the way it's going to be. Jacob is going to get the blessing. So while Esau's out hunting and that kind of thing, mother, Rebecca, takes Jacob and gives him a wool clothing and sneaks him into the room and pretends he's Esau. And so Isaac blesses Jacob instead of Esau. You know, and however that culture worked, that could not be taken back. So when Esau comes back into town and realizes what happens, he's got some feelings about it. So Jacob gets frightened and takes off and runs away. It takes him 14 years to work through that dysfunctional family system. How many of you have taken years to realize you have a particular behavior and you realize it and you start to change it, but it's taken you 7 years to realize it? How many of us realize we also contribute to the difficulty in relationships and it's not always the other person? Sure. So he went away and he met a fella, and this guy had two daughters, and Jacob said, I want to marry Rachel, your daughter. And the father says, you have to work 7 years to do that. And Jacob says, okay, I'll work 7 years to do that. So 7 years goes by, and Jacob says, okay, now, what about Rachel? And the father says, no, I meant Leah. I didn't mean Rachel. Right? So here we have that second born. Here we have that child that was favored by the mother, not affirmed by the father. He gets conned. He gets taken advantage of. He's not wise to the world. He spent 7 years of his life working for something, and it really didn't work out. How many of us spent years of our lives working at something that doesn't work out? So it's there. And he says, 7 more years. So Jacob loves Rachel, and he says, okay, 7 more years. At the end of that 7 years, he marries Rachel. So now we got the triangle of this father, Leah, and Rachel, but that's another family story, but believe me, that's problematic. So Jacob says to himself, and this is why I know it took him 14 years to work through that scapegoat role. After he was free, he said, I want to go reconcile with my brother. I want to go home. I want to be where my family is. I want to go see what that's like. Now, his last visions of Esau was red-faced, upset and angry. So he's got some anxiety, but he's also got he's got some wealth, he's got sheep, he's got lots of stuff. So what he does is he sends herds of sheep and people and food to Esau before he gets to where Esau is, to hopefully to appease him and say, hey, you know, hope you're not mad anymore. Right? So he doesn't know how Esau's going to be. And this is why we know the hero child's kind of innocent in a way, because Esau says, my brother's coming, and he's excited, and he runs out to meet him. And they meet each other, and they care about each other. They care about each other. And there was reconciliation. And that's how we know we're breaking out of family roles when we work toward reconciliation. Something else happened that's very powerful. Jacob had 10 children. And what he did at his death, he blessed each child individually. It is a major shift in culture when you change who gets blessed in the family. And here's Jacob making it everybody being blessed within the family. Everybody's on equal ground. So working out of that family role of scapegoat, working out of that, choosing the reconciliation, when it comes his turn at his death to relate to the family, he blesses every child. That's also how I know he recovered from that dysfunctional family, because he blessed every child. He was healed. So how do I understand to use that lens with that family? I think it's pretty clear, but I have a tendency, some of you might have noticed, I can take a story and try to make it what I want to make it so it makes sense. And I'll do that periodically, but I don't think I'm doing that. I don't think I'm doing that in this case. So that's your homework, to go make sure I'm not doing that so it makes sense. Makes sense to you. Now that particular family role, hero, scapegoat, lost child, mascot, dependent, enabler, is a classic, because as you can see, because you can have the hero being the second born, so that mixes up, but that's the standard model that the field of codependency and addiction uses. If there was something like that in my life, I can use that model to back out of my life and understand who I am. I can have that model of family in my inner world. The model of that family in my inner world, the hero child who says punitive, could be the jailkeeper Buddha's referring to. When Jesus says the kingdom is within you, that family system that I have internalized will create walls so I can't get to the kingdom. So I can't get to where it's peace. And in both cases, in Jesus and Buddha, the outcome was peace within themselves. Buddha with compassion, and Jesus was saying and teaching that all peace and joy will be given to you, that beyond understanding that it's not of this world. And that doesn't mean of this earth world. That meant of the world of values in Rome at that time, because that's how they referred to the world. That meant where they were. You know, you shouldn't take that as out of this world, because that doesn't make any sense at all. And so there's a way to escape our family model. There's a way to escape it. Now, I remember one time when I first was talking to somebody beginning my clinical work, he said, there's three of you. I went, oh my God, one's enough. He said, there's three of you. There's the energetic one that goes out and does things. There's the one that actually kind of beats up on himself. And then he said, there's the one that's very quiet and reflective. Now, I've got to tell you, I didn't know the quiet and reflective part of who I was at that particular time in my life, so I didn't know what he was talking about. And that's the point. That part of me was lost. There was a part of me, a quality in my life, that has become very important to me that I didn't even know I had. I didn't know it until I made that decision to begin to move inward. There's the lost child. How many of you ever do something and there's a judgmental voice that comes up and really hammers hard and that part goes back? and that part's weaker than the one that hammers. Is that the part that gets scapegoated? So you can take that model and play with it and go in your own life and look at your own history and see where it fits. I mean, certainly we looked at a family model, and you can see where it works in the family model with that particular family. We like to use that model on other people, our partner, spouse, somebody. We don't like to use it on ourselves. If you need to use it on other people, go ahead. Then get in the mirror and see yourself. But you can also see it on television shows and things like that. But by doing this, you will break the barrier that prevents you from that inner peace you want. You will get past the jailkeeper that's stopping you from getting to the peacefulness of that enlightenment. That's what happens when you do that kind of reflective work.